After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BeHereNow.
Welcome to the Krishnadas Pilgrim Heart Hour. In this podcast, Krishnadas shares his warm-hearted and down-to-earth path to the divine. If you are interested in supporting Krishnadas's podcast, please go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/KD.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question about partnership. And if the husband or
in
wife...
In business?
No. In marriage.
Oh,
if the
business.
Husband or, if the husband or wife is not on the same, similar path, and it causes a divide. Mm-hmm. You know, because I've heard that your husband or the wife, the partner, can be the home guru, but, you know, and teach patience when they leave the toilet seat up, whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. But what if you're not on the same or similar path, and it causes a divide?
You mean like
they don't have
one
that
is human
longing.
And one's not. What are you talking about? I don't know. I had a friend who used to chant with me a lot. A woman who came quite often, and she said that she and her husband weren't getting along, and they were probably going to get divorced. I said, really, what's going on? She said, well, you know, I love your chanting so much that I play it in every room of the house all the time. I see. Turn it the fuck off. They're still married. You know? What people my mind boggles a little bit at the what people think is a spiritual path. You know, you got to be a human being. You know, that's our first job. How do we get to be good human beings? And if you can't be a good human being with your partner, well, that's probably the most difficult thing there is. So, you get this inner strength from spiritual work to be a real person. Not to develop a spiritual ego. I'm on this path and you're not. You know, that you're doing something wrong. That's not helpful. That's not true. So I don't really know. I mean, it sounds like there might be some other problems there lurking other than what particular guru you have. And I think probably that's where the problems are, not what you think your spiritual path is. obviously no communication skills going on. Maybe you should work on that. You know? I mean, we're in relationship to everyone and everything all the time. And the people that we're in relationship with, you know, if they don't feel loved, then you're not doing something right. And then you're not, whatever your path is, you're not even on it. If you can't be with your partner in a good way, not you, but if one can't be with their partner in a good way, then first of all, your spiritual work isn't working, and you need to see counseling. Develop some skills of talking to each other. Forget what you think you believe, you know, spiritually. Be a person first, you know. That's what we are. And all the spiritual stuff is to give us the strength to be good human beings. What's a good human being? One who has caring and kindness and compassion. So if your spiritual path is dividing you from your partner, something's wrong there. Neither one of you is doing very good with it. So I would, you know, stop thinking about your spiritual path and start thinking about being a good person and developing some talking to someone. You know, unraveling the projections we put on other people. This is what we get the strength to do through practice, through spiritual practice, because we start to unravel our own projections. And then we can see what we're putting on other people. People have to learn to talk. It's very difficult to talk without accusations and anger and, you know, wounded egos and stuff. It's very difficult.
Hey, Kitty. How are you? I'll be good, I promise.
Don't promise me.
I won't promise anybody then. The guy who was talking about surfing and being a surfer.
A what?
The guy before who was talking about that he likes to surf, the waves, the water. That was a while ago, but it's still sticking in me because my father was a really, really good swimmer. I mean, and I remember as a little girl, I grew up in the Rockaways, not far from where you lived. And I'd wait for him to come home at night, and I'd carry his towel down to the beach, and that would be like the biggest thing I could possibly do is carry his towel. So I carried his towel down to the beach, and I'd sit on his towel, and I'd watch him swim all the way out. I mean, so far out, I get so scared, and I get so worried because I wasn't sure if he's going to come back. And he did. He came back. And then he would take me all the way out there past the breakers, and I had to ask him, but Dad, what if I get a wave comes and carries me away? And he always told me that if a wave comes and carries you away, you can't fight the wave. You have to go with the wave. If you fight the wave, it'll break your neck. If you go with the wave, you'll end up peacefully on the beach.
Or in China.
Not actually, because that would have been a little far from Rockaway Shore, but
okay, Africa.
And I would have been pretty crusty by that time. But, you know, it's I never thought of it that much when he was alive. But after he passed away, it's been like a really important piece of my life because it's taught me that you also can forgive the wave and you can let it go. Because that was, for the longest time, my biggest problem was forgiveness and letting go. Mm-hmm. And by the way, thanks for telling me to retire. I appreciate it.
Did I tell you to retire?
Yes, you did. Two years ago, right here. Sure. Yeah. When are you retiring?
Next life.
Nah.
What am I going to retire from? I already don't do anything.
Then why are you so tired?
I watch too much TV, that's all.
I just wonder if we know very much about Maharaji's early life.
We know a little bit. I spent time with his grandson recently, my last trip to India. He's one of the most decorated fighter pilots in the Indian airport and Air Force. Amazing. He's an incredible being. So beautiful. Maharaji was born in a little town called Akbarpur. His father was a landowner. His mother died when he was young, and his father married again. And his stepmother didn't treat him very well. And so at an early age, maybe around 10 or so, shortly after he had been betrothed to a young girl, he disappeared and went to the jungle. And after some years, they found him and brought him home. And he got married at that point. And I believe he disappeared again for quite a while. And then he came back and he lived at home for a while. He had two sons and a daughter. And they say there was a period of quite a few years that he never went out of the house in this little village, but that people would come to the village, sadhus and people, and go right to the house and knock on the door and ask to talk to him. And they would come in and they would speak with Maharaji for a while and then leave. And this would go on day after day, year after year, and no one ever thought it was unusual. Maharaji used to say things like, "I have the keys to the mind." You know? And he used to say to us, "I can turn your minds against me." And we'd go, "Don't do that." And he would laugh, you know. So at that time, people were kept coming to the village to see him, but nobody in the village thought it was unusual that this guy who sat in his house all the time, anybody would even know he was there. But it went on for years like that. And then he stayed around the village pretty much until his daughter got married. And then after that, he started to leave for very long periods and only come home for very short periods of time, very irregularly. None of the devotees of Neem Karoli Baba knew that he was even married and had a family. No one knew. But you know, every once in a while, all of a sudden Maharaji would get up and he'd go sit on the roof of this dharamsala in the back of the temple. Big flat roof in those days. And he'd sit in the very middle and he wouldn't let anyone come. And then a car would arrive at the front at the temple and two guys would walk into the temple. They'd walk right through the front of the temple, through the back of the temple, right up to the roof, sit with Maharaji and talk for a while, then leave. And they wouldn't look at anybody or talk to anybody. And it turned out it was his son and his nephew. And they were coming for instructions what to do. He would tell them what to plant, when to plant it, where to take it to sell, what to charge, everything. He was running the whole show 24/7, and no one knew. A few people knew, but not many. I just went to, he got his name from this village called Neeb Karori, is the way it's pronounced there. And what happened is at some point in the 1920s when he was probably maybe in his early 20s, something like that. I don't really know exactly. Maybe he went to this village and he asked the villagers to dig out a cave for him in the middle of this field. And he lived in this cave for about 5 years and no one ever saw him come out. And then somehow or other, another cave developed. I don't know, maybe he dug it himself at night or something. And about 100 yards away, and there's a tunnel that goes from one cave to the other tunnel, underground. Arjun and I just went to this place on our last visit. While he was alive, he wouldn't let anyone go to this village. But after he left the body, Siddhi Ma went there and people started to go. At some point he came up to the mountains and He lived on the plains for a long time, but in the late 30s or mid 40s, he started to come up to the mountains and meet. He met this whole generation of people when they were young. And then he disappeared and came back years later when they were older. And then they all became his devotees. Like, he met Mr. Tiwari when he was a boy. He was completely double-jointed. He used to be able to put his arms on the ground like this, you know, from the elbow like this, and do a complete somersault without taking his elbows up. So he used to do this for the school kids, and then they would give him some food from their school lunches. And one time, he took Mr. Tiwari's lunch, and he ate it, and Tiwari slapped him. And 20 years later, when Maharaji came back, he said, "Remember when you slapped me?" So they think he spent about a total of 8 years in these caves. No one knows who his guru is. He never talked about his guru. Watch TV. What else do you do in a cave? There was a village woman who used to bring him a glass of milk every day. That's what he lived on, one glass of milk. And she would leave it outside the cave in the morning. And she died. And he was starving to death, so he came out of his cave, apparently, and took a stick and threatened Hanuman. "Are you going to starve me to death? I'll beat you." And then from the next day on, somebody just would leave me milk there. So many stories. One of the devotees told me that Maharaj used to take him, and they would drive near his village, his home village, because his father had been a big landowner, and so he inherited all that land. And he was like the official of the village. And the official used to wear a particular type of shirt and a dhoti and a kurta and dress a particular way. And Maharaji used to just wear a blanket, you know. So this devotee said they drove near the village, and the driver left them there, and they walked through the jungle to the village. By the time they got to the village, he looked at Maharaji, and his clothes had completely changed. And he walked around the village greeting everybody, and everybody said hello. And then they left, and by the time they got back to the car, he was back in his blanket. And apparently nobody in the village noticed that he wasn't there much. Once again, he had the keys to the mind. Very strange. They thought, well, he's always here. That's because he wanted them to think that. He wandered and wandered. He slept out on the road in the rain culverts, you know, these big cement things for the rainwater. He wandered through the jungle. He had no home. He went from town to town, place to place, village to village, house to house. It was only later, the last years of his life, that the temples started to be built so that the devotees could gather and see him. Otherwise, it was impossible to find him. But he always showed up when you needed him. He was there. And his wife, he had, his oldest son had 8 daughters or 5 daughters. And some of the Westerners met his wife, Maharaji's wife. And she said, he's no saint. Wait, if I have a grandson, then he can be a saint. Because in India, all the property and everything's handed down through the male side of the family, to the boys. So the family name is a big thing there. We didn't know where he was from. We didn't know where he was going. All we wanted to do was look at him. Our eyes would not close. We just stared. It was all the beauty in the universe was shining, sparkling, radiating right in front of us. And we couldn't take our eyes off of it. It was impossible. You just couldn't. You didn't want to, and you couldn't. When he would say go, it was like getting no. And he would laugh, because he knew. He said, my mantra is go away. One time we were sitting with him, Radha, you remember, this was you. You did this. We were sitting with him in the room. The bus had come, and we had been in the back of the temple. The bus had come. There was a regular public service government bus that regular human beings took. And they were on, this bus was the last bus that would come out of the mountains and go to the town where we were staying. The driver was a devotee, so he would stop at the temple and wait for the Westerners to pick up, to get jowed, sent away by Maharaji, pick up the things, get on the bus. Otherwise, we'd be stuck at the temple, and the driver knew that Maharaji didn't want us there. So there were people sitting on the bus waiting for us, you know. So we get the message, bus has come. So we went to see Maharaji, jow, jow. So this particular day, we went in the room and we sat down. It was something unusual. It was like, I felt like I don't know, when you were a kid, did you ever make Jell-O? You know, and you put like a piece of fruit in the Jell-O, and it kind of suspended in the Jell-O, you know what I mean? That's what it felt like. We were sitting in this room, the atmosphere was so thick and so deep. Nobody could move, nobody could talk. And Maharaji also was just sitting there like that, you know? And he would look at us and he'd say, Jow, go. And nobody would move. And he's just like, he would disappear again, you know? And we would just sit there. And then he kind of opened his eyes and he'd see us. Jow. Like this. This went on for a long time. Then somebody said, Maharaji, what is this? And that was it. The spell had been broken. He went, ah. He said, it's in the blood. Now get out of here. Go, 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 go. And we really had to go because this was the big jowl. There was no, you know, the little jowls, go, go, go. And you could avoid that. But once you said, jowl, then you knew you had to go. It's in the blood, he said. What does that mean? It's in the blood? What is he, some kind of Christian mystic? The blood of Christ? What is he talking about? It's in the blood. He used to say, you know, the same blood runs through everyone's veins. It's one family. All beings, one family.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.